You're listening to the Untaming podcast.
Rewild the Child.
Here is your host, Emily.
Hello, welcome back to episode 18 of the Untaming podcast. The last episode with podiatrist Dr. Ray McClanahan on barefootedness has received a lot of positive feedback, so be sure to listen to that one if you haven't already. Today's episode with Jen Philpott is on elimination communication, or baby-led pottying, or natural infant hygiene. There are a lot of different terms for the practice. When I was editing this episode, there were a couple of things I realised I should clarify since we didn't really touch on them. The first is that babies will try to avoid weeing on you if you are holding them. This is why people often have a lot of success if they do a lot of baby wearing or are physically holding their baby in their arms. They'll usually squirm a bit or make some noise to let you know they're uncomfortable beforehand. The exception to this would be if you're holding them facing away from you, in which case their crotch isn't pressed up against you, so they may feel like you have them in a toileting position. And in terms of naps or sleeping, babies don't wee when they're in deep sleep. I used to say they don't wee at all if they're sleeping until someone corrected me that they can wee when they're in that transition of light sleep. But same again with being held. They will usually squirm or start to grizzle a little before going. This is why people, myself included, find nighttime EC a lot easier than daytime, if you're bed sharing. Also, baby-led pottying can vary a lot from family to family. Some people only do it part-time, which we started doing with my son when he was 10 months, and it still proved to be successful. He was soon nappy-free in the daytime, and then by 2 years he was nappy-free at night without us actively doing anything at nighttime. He also refused to use a potty until he was closer to two. Because our life with kids has been, while we have either been living on a farm in a caravan, in an off-grid house with an outside compost toilet, or now in a converted garage, we have not lived somewhere long-term with an indoor toilet. So while I started off trying and failing to use the potty, it worked better for us to instead teach our son to just take him outside if he needed to go to the toilet. And later our daughter started taking herself outside once she could crawl at about 6 months. If it was a number two, we would just use a shovel and toss it on the compost, you know, therefore cutting out the middleman of emptying and cleaning the potty. I know this isn't everyone's cup of tea, and it was a challenge for my daughter when we moved back to New Zealand and she wasn't able to open doors yet. So she did have a lot of accidents near doorways. But if you're living more rurally, using the great outdoors can be a lot easier and cleaner. And I prefer it for another reason as well, because, you know, when they're outside, obviously not right on the doorstep, but further out, like on the grass or under a tree, behind a bush, they're able to toilet in a natural toileting squat, so they're not kinking up those muscles inside. But having said all of that, that was more when they were younger. It's not something that really works in an urban environment. They both use the toilet now. I think the four-year-old would prefer to go outside, but he knows that's not so culturally and socially acceptable. The 20-month-old happily uses the toilet and potty. They're still pretty novel for her. Anyway, sorry, that's enough of me going on about myself. Here's a quick message from our sponsor. The next episode to air on the 12th of July is with our first return guest, the highly respected and much loved psychologist Robin Grill, where he will talk about how the way we were treated as children affects our responses today to our own children, and most importantly, how to heal ourselves. But for now, here is Jen Philpott. Jen Philpott was born and grew up in Croydon and currently lives in Upminster, London, with her husband Mark and their four children, ranging in ages from 6 to 12 years old. Jen has a scientific background and a PhD in bioinformatics. She worked as a marine sciences lab technician, both on land and at sea, at the University of California, a genome lab software developer in England, and then as an IT consultant in the finance industry before taking maternity leave in 2007. Jen is a baby-led and toddler potty training expert. She educates parents on the benefits and practicalities of relying less on nappies and more on human evolution to manage their baby's bottoms. Her down-to-earth approach with unconventional ideas appeals to mainstream parents who are attracted by the logic of evolution. All four of Jen's children were nappy-free babies. In her one-minute-long cartoon showing how using a potty is as easy as changing a nappy, racked up 32,000 views on Facebook in less than a week. Pottying is no longer a part of Jen's daily life. She now works as a software developer, but she still runs a popular and very helpful elimination communication Facebook group and also practices other attachment parenting philosophies. Her newest venture is called Talking Times Tables, a simple system she has created to help children learn multiplication. Last night she had 8 hours of sleep, and for dinner tonight she had leftover shepherd's pie. Jen, welcome to the show.
Hi, Emily. It's a pleasure to be here.
I first came across the idea of not using nappies maybe 12 years ago when I heard about someone who practiced this. And it was a few years later before I heard about it again. And that's when I actively began trying to find out more so I could be prepared for when I had my own children. But elimination communication, EC, nappy-free, diaper-free, natural infant hygiene, baby-led pottying, there are so many different terms for the practice, yet none of them are really clear to the layperson what is actually being done. So I use the terms all interchangeably, not really settling on any of them. What term do you prefer to use, and what's your elevator pitch when you explain the practice to people who have never heard of it?
Okay, well, I prefer baby-led potty training, mainly because a friend of mine, Amber Hatch, wrote a book, and she called it nappy-free baby, but really she was pushing for baby-led potty training because of the baby-led weaning and really following your child's lead that kind of comes with that terminology. I think elimination communication is a bit odd for Brits, because elimination means like to knock out of something. We don't really think of it as to do with wee and poo, really. So it's just a bit strange. And I think to have potty training in there is kind of helpful because it at least shows what you're talking about. Mm-hmm. Though a lot of people strongly object to that because of traditional potty training methods, and it doesn't really apply in that case. So let's go for the elevator pitch then. So what I would say is this is, if you imagine that you're using cloth nappies in the 50s and everything has to be washed by hand and hung out to dry regardless of the weather, you're going to try and minimise the amount of mess that you have to deal with. And that's the kind of baby-led potty training that I think of. Like, what if we were going to try and minimise the cleanup around this? What can we do to get as much wee and poo somewhere other than a nappy? And deliberately, not just kids wandering around like destroying your carpet. So I tend to think of it as in how we used to go about this before disposables were so convenient, rather than necessarily caveman times.
Well, that kind of brings me to my next question, because I think disposable nappies have been around since maybe the late 40s, which is only, you know, maybe 70 years ago, so just a blip on humanity's history. Can you share with us more on the history of what was done before?
Well, it's interesting because it's quite different in different parts of the world, I think. And obviously the weather plays some significant role. Though the Chinese don't seem to mind how cold it gets. Their kids have always got their bums popping out of their pants with all their split crotch clothing. Yeah. And yes, I do tend to think only into the recent history when I think of our cultures, really. Because starting from, evolutionarily, what happened 100,000 years ago doesn't necessarily resonate with a lot of people. Mm. So you've got to be pretty keen to be going that route. But to say, well, your grandparents did it, it doesn't seem so far off then. And I think babies do have that instinct, but you lose it quite quickly because there's so many other things are so different now. The way that we behave with our children, the things that we do with our children, you know, they're not attached to us at all times for safety reasons. So that can get in the way a bit with the whole natural instinct thing. So I think, I know certainly before disposables, and disposables didn't really get popular here until the 80s. So I'm a 70s baby and I was in cloth. My brother's 1980, he was in cloth, because people hated disposable nappies then. They were really uncomfortable. They gave children horrendous nappy rash and they were really expensive. So they might have been around since the 40s, but they only really took off in the 80s and possibly towards the mid 80s, really. So right up until that point, kids were still in terry toweling nappies. And we had this great big nappy bucket in our sideway with sanitizer in it, and the nappies would go in there. We had this huge spoon and this massive pair of tongs for pulling them out, and then they'd go in for a spin in the washing machine, you know. And this was, and I remember this, so it can't have been that long ago, really. And so they just made a much more of an effort to get the kids out of those nappies as fast as possible and into these wool pants. And there's really interesting training manuals from back in the earlier part of the 20th century, and they talk about how you can get a baby into wool, like literally wool pants or something, from sort of 3 or 4 months is the idea. Because once you've got them pooing on a potty, then it's just a whole different ball game. Yeah. Because things aren't getting soiled, and you can handle a little bit of clothing getting wet. That's really not nearly the same as having to deal with soiled nappies all the time.
Yeah. How did you first find out about and begin practicing baby-led pottying?
So when my first daughter was 6 months old, I had a friend, she had children before me, and she said, oh, when they're 6 months old and they start having solids, get them straight onto a potty. And I was like, right, okay. And I didn't really think of anything before that. I didn't question it at all. I used cloth from birth. We just used muslins, like square muslins, yeah, and a nappy nipper. So we didn't have anything fancy on that. Just used them for most of the time. And then she hit 6 months. We started doing solids. And I was like, right, bing, here we go. We're going to put her on the potty. But she wouldn't sit down. She absolutely wouldn't. We tried to put her to sit down. She would stand. Her legs were completely rigid because she liked to stand up to poo, because she always pooed after I fed her. So I would feed her. And even when she was tiny, I would feed her and then I would just stand her on my knees and like hold her underneath her arms. And then she would do this kind of semi-squat thing and just fill her nappy. And I, you know, look, when I discovered EC and I looked back, I was like, I cannot believe that I just set myself up for all that washing. When I knew exactly what was going to happen, it happened every time, and I was expecting it and I was prepared for it, and I would stand there and wait for it and encourage her and then have to do all that washing. So, but anyway, so she wouldn't sit on the potty. So I went onto the internet to try and figure out how to help her sit on the potty. And that's when I discovered it was a thing. And I read a brilliant website called Tribal Baby, written by an Australian woman, and it just changed everything for me. Absolutely everything. And there's a couple of times actually in my parenting of my first where suddenly something completely changed the way that I was looking at things, and that was one of them. One of them was this: you've never actually considered the fact that that poo could go somewhere else.
Yeah.
You've literally, it has never ever crossed your mind that you could take that nappy off and stand her over something that was easier to wash. Not once. even though you've done that however many times a day for the last 6 months. It never, ever crossed your mind. So that was a bit of an eye-opener. And I discovered I could just stand her on the toilet. So I just, instead of standing her on me in a nappy, I would just stand her on the toilet with her legs either side of the hole. She would do a crouch down thing, and there we go. And we just started from there.
Brilliant.
But I'm going to tell you the other one. Can I tell you the other one while I'm thinking about it?
Yeah.
The other one was to do with breastfeeding. Mm-hmm. And because I've been to these NCT classes and they talked about breastfeeding and we'd done the breastfeeding and everything was geared towards keeping you breastfeeding for 6 months. Mm-hmm. So everything was really focused on, you've got to go for 6 months. Do your absolute best to get to 6 months. You've got to try to get to 6 months. And here she was approaching 6 months. And I was like trying to look for the, what do we do now? And so I'm looking at the different milk that we're going to move her on to. And I had a conversation with someone. I don't even really remember who this was, but it suddenly dawned on me that I was looking for a substitute for something that I already had. Mm-hmm. That was going to be better than what that substitute was, and everything was going perfectly fine, and why would you stop that now?
Yeah.
And that was something that had never occurred to me either, really. You know, I'd just kind of gone, right, you do this for 6 months and then you move on to the next thing, and I hadn't actually really thought about why would I do that. And then, because I wasn't really following any breastfeeding stuff then either. And then I started finding milkmaid things and getting into the Kelly Mum stuff. And then I was like, oh, this, I should really be doing this for a lot longer now. Yeah, so then we just carried on. So that was quite interesting too. So both of those things, you'd think that I'd be a lot more aware of the different options than I was.
Mm. Yeah, it's just so easy to not be thinking of those.
Yeah, and so that's what I try and think about. You know, when I was really doing this baby potting and setting up Born Ready, that's what I'd be remembering, is that I could talk to people as if I was talking to me, because I was so unaware of it. You know, I was so unaware of it that it's easy to put yourself in the position of someone who's never heard of it, because I've never heard of it. It's not like it occurred to me myself. I had to actually read about it and go, oh. And so it makes it easier to talk to people who are also in that position, whether they then go, oh, or whether they go, not for me.
Yeah.
You at least know that you were in exactly the same position as them.
Yeah. So I'm sure many people hear about nappy free and immediately think that's too much work, or I don't have time for that. It's just easier to use nappies. However, your video that I mentioned at the beginning that demonstrated how using a potty is as easy as changing a nappy, can you tell us, you know, what are the benefits of raising a nappy-free child?
I think there's lots of benefits. I think you pay attention to your child much more, and in a different kind of way. Mm. So it gives you a different kind of rhythm, and it gives you something that you're, I want to say, tuning into, but that makes it sound harder than it is. Just this kind of underlying rhythm that you're much more aware of. And it solved a lot of problems for us that before were like just total mysteries. Now, why is my child crying now? Why won't my child latch? Why won't she sleep? And lots of these things just got solved when we started putting babies on potties. They just went away. And you think, like, that's just a good, you know, parents, they go through this whole list of things. I had a whole list of things written down. Why is my baby crying? So that I could just run through the list, you know, well, we're going to check this. And most people check, oh, they need to burp. And that's their very first thing. Oh, maybe it's wind. Very first thing. But our very first thing was, maybe they need to wee.
Yeah.
And so if they're unhappy or grizzly, or you're expecting them to be like really snuggling down for a sleep and they're not, then I just hold them over a potty, they do the wee, and then boom, straight to sleep.
Yeah.
So it became literally our first port of call. Before, do they need to burp? Before, are they cold? Before, do they need to be bounced about? Everything was just hold them over a potty, so you need to do a wee, because it solved so many things. And I think that kind of tuning in is just incredibly helpful, because it gives you another option that works so well so many times. I mean, Yeah, really, that's one of the best things.
That just stands out to me because I guess something that's often misinterpreted as a breastfeeding issue is when the baby, you know, pops off the breast and, you know, and it's put down as being, oh, maybe they've got a tongue tie, a low milk supply. And in my experience, it's been, you know, the baby needs to go to the toilet.
Absolutely. If you're, I know tongue ties, you know, it's quite different, but tongue tie is always there. If your baby can't latch because you've got tongue tie, that's going to be every single time. But if sometimes they don't latch and sometimes they're fantastic, then that's much more likely to be something else, isn't it? And for us, that was if they're popping on and off the breast, popping on and off the breast, you just hold them over a potty. And usually they do this big poo and then they latch and then they fall immediately to sleep. And that was, yes, solved a lot of problems. And I don't think, like you said, that video that shows that it's that it isn't much more work, it really isn't much work. If you know it's coming, then it really isn't much more work. If you're very tense about it and you spend the whole day waiting for it or watching for it or trying to catch it at the last second, then that's obviously a different state of affairs than if you know it's coming. So if you know that your baby's going to poo after they feed, if they're a little baby and you're breastfeeding them and you're thinking they're probably going to poo during this feed or after this feed, if it's during, then it's very easy because you can take your nappy off in advance and just hold a cloth around them or you know, take off some of their clothes so that their nappy's just there, and it's easy if you're using disposables. And when they start to pop off, undo their nappy, hold them over the potty, and then put them back on again afterwards to finish off. Or if you know they're going to wait to the end, wait until the end and they're done, take off their nappy or just hold them straight over the potty, and then they're done. And then as they get older, that often just translates into meal times. So they might poo first thing when they wake up, or they might poo straight after they've eaten, or during when they're eating. They're in that high chair and they start making the face and you recognize the face. And usually you've got time to move in on the face if you know what's going on, because people go, oh, here we go. Right, we're going to wait. Well, we'll wait until you're finished before we change you. We'll wait until you're finished. I'll just get the fresh nappy ready. You know, they know what's happening. They just do everything afterwards, whereas they could do it in the other order. They could take the nappy off and then wait and then put the clean nappy on. And they wouldn't have to do all that cleanup.
Yeah. Do you have any... So we've been talking about nappies, but what about wipes? What do you recommend that's more environmentally friendly? Do you just use toilet paper?
I didn't use wipes, actually. So to start with, I use cloth wipes.
Mm-hmm.
And cheeky wipes are fantastic, by the way. I'm going to plug them. But they were, yeah, they're kind of cold and wet often when I was using them. But just, you can't get that. They're not really damp. They're kind of wet. But as soon as that was before we started using a potty. As soon as we started using a potty, we didn't need them anymore because it's so clean, so clean. It's just a tiny dab with toilet paper and this little spot of, so say you've got a breastfed baby. They've just done one of those big, yellow gushy poos into the potty, and then you wipe them with toilet paper and you literally get a circle on the toilet paper that's about the size of your little fingernail. And that's it. It's so clean. So whenever we had a catch, you really didn't need much. And if we had a miss, and I would just run them under the tap at that stage, I'd just run them under the tap, or I had a sports bottle on top of my toilet so I could kind of just dangle them over and kind of hose them off. Because I stopped using wipes completely. We never had any in the house.
Oh, brilliant.
And because you just don't use them. And then I'd be horrified when I'd see people cleaning their children, how many wipes it took. We go, oh, I've just watched that woman in the park and she's used 8 wipes to clean one bum. And you think, well, of course she has, because she's got an awful lot to scrape off. And you just forget.
Okay, so you began baby-led pottying with your youngest 3 children right from birth. Can you tell the listeners how this works with a newborn?
It's great with a newborn. Mm. Oh, because they're so lovely, aren't they? And they're so floppy. And they just kind of do anything that you want them to do. So we caught the meconium with a couple of them. One of them had already gone before she came out. So there wasn't so much to catch with that one. But the others, I think we caught the meconium. And just doing exactly the same thing, basically. Feed, hold over a potty. Feed, holdover a potty. And it's just the same. It's the same whatever size they are. Feed, hold over a potty, and then you get lucky or you don't get lucky. But they pick it up so fast. I think when they're newborn, you just have to be a bit more supportive in terms of like supporting their neck as you're holding them. So in that classic newborn hold where the baby's back is against your chest and they're facing out, you're facing out. So if you look in a mirror, you can see both people's faces, babies like that. And you hold them just underneath their thighs, just above their knees, and lift their legs up. And when a baby's a little bit stronger, you can do that and they'll keep their head up and they'll look at themselves in the mirror, or, you know, they'll just generally be in that position just fine. But when they're tiny and they're really floppy, you can kind of lay them down your arm a bit or really lean back yourself or something so they get a bit more support for the head. Yeah. But yeah, it's much the same however old they are, really. Much the same. It's just having the guts to go for it. And it sounds really silly because you wouldn't think that it takes courage to hold a child over a potty. Why would it? But the first time you do it, you feel so ridiculous. Just so ridiculous. And even with the second baby, so with the first, we did this from 6 months. And then the second was born. And I was thinking, yeah, I'm going to do this right from the beginning now. I'm going to do this right from the beginning now. Here we are. Here we are. We've got her. Let's go. And then you think, oh, do I really? I mean, is this really going to work? If this doesn't work, how embarrassing would that be? But there's nobody there. Like, there's no one there to see you. If it doesn't work, it doesn't work. But it's still, it's almost like getting over all that, all your ideas of how you thought this would go. Yeah. Now you're doing something completely different. So that really just starting is really hard, however old they are. If you've never done it before with that child even. So people say, got this Facebook group been going for a long time, and people come on and say, I intended to start this for birth and now they're 4 months old, is it too late? I did it a bit when they were just a couple of months old and now suddenly they're 12 months old, is it still worth giving it a go? And you think, this is exactly what happens, is that it feels like a really big deal to give it another go. Even if you've done it before with that child a long time ago, even if you did it with the last child, you've not quite got around to doing it with this child, that taking the nappy off and holding them over a potty for the first time, the second time, the third time, just it does take quite a lot of guts. So go for it. Go for it when no one's watching. And then you're just in a much better position because you've done it once.
Yeah. I think one of the biggest barriers for me was, I guess, the fear of the mess. You know, it's that... Yeah, I think that was all that was holding me back. But now, once I've actually done it, I no longer see it as any messier than breastfeeding or dealing with a baby's drool or their spit up. And
that's right. And you actually, you told me you actually went nappy free completely from 6 months.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. So that's pretty amazing. So did you handle that mainly through using a sling a lot when they were little?
I carried her a lot. But mostly I just used timing. It would be kind of once every hour. She was pretty regular.
You see, so timing works brilliantly.
Mm.
I've found timing works really well. And you just sort of have to space it out as they get older. And then suddenly when it stops working, it's because they can go 2 hours between wheeze now and you're still trying them every 40 minutes and they're getting really fed up.
Yeah.
So I think you kind of have to adjust your timing as they get older, don't you? But timing, once they get that reaction where if you put them in the right position, they always try, timing works so well. And you do have to pay attention to that timing. Before, when I was talking about that rhythm that you kind of are aware of, that underlying rhythm, that is kind of the rhythm to your day.
Yeah.
And if your day is built around other junctures, like if you've got more kids, it might be based on school runs and nursery pickups and other kind of things, you have to figure out how the offers just slot into what you've already got. So as you probably do now already with your breastfeeding or the baby's naps, you know, you slot it into the fixed times. Oh, I'll feed in the morning when the kids are having breakfast and then we'll do that school run. So that would be feed in the morning when the kids are having breakfast, offer the potty, then do the school run.
Yeah.
I'm heading down to I've done the school run. I know I can only go like an hour between offers. I know it's going to take an hour and a half, so I need to know at what point I'm going to offer there and how I'm going to do it. And once you've got it sorted out, then you get into that rhythm.
Mm.
And that's almost easier than having less of a rigid timetable, because then then you kind of lose track of time more easily, because you haven't got these solid markers in the day when, you know, you're definitely doing something for another kid. So you have to be a bit more aware of what your child's rhythm is to go, oh, it's on the hour, a better offer. And that can interfere with, if you're leading a more adult life and doing things more for yourself, you know, I'm going to meet my friends, I'm taking the baby, but really I'm going to meet my friends for coffee, then that's where you have to be aware of your baby underneath that. Once you're focusing more on children, it's easier because they have shorter periods that you're focusing on anyway.
Yeah, well, that's something my friends who practice, you know, this EC, we all joke that we're most likely to have a miss when we're distracted, like especially if we're out socialising. And it's fine if you're with other people who are doing it. I remember being in a hammock once with my friend's daughter when she weed on me and we just laughed it off. But it's quite a challenge when you're socialising with people who, you know, who don't understand it.
That's right. And it can feel like you're always breaking up this adult conversation.
Yes.
To attend to your baby. Mm. Now, if you're somewhere where you can just offer and it's not really a big deal, like when the babies are little and you're sitting around in the park and you're breastfeeding in the park and then you're just offering a potty on the grass, you know, I mean, I don't mean like literally on the grass, but you've got a baby and you've got Tupperware or something there, then it doesn't really interfere. But if you're meeting somewhere and you then have to keep going to the toilets, keep taking your baby out, then you feel like it's really rude to the person that you're with. And that again, that's difficult. It's difficult to be in that situation and choose who you're going to be rude to. So you can either be rude to your friend and keep, you know, breaking up the conversation and off you go, and or you can kind of ignore the child that you've been trying to teach all this time that you were always going to pay attention to them, even though they're tiny, you know. So it's there's balance there, isn't there, that can become quite difficult. But it is only for short periods, really, because they grow up so fast.
What about what advice do you have for parents who are interested in doing it at night time, or maybe they're too daunted by the idea of it? How do you prepare the bed for it?
For nights?
Yeah.
So I tried nappy-free nights with most of my kids at some times or other. And I found that for us, I preferred them to have a nappy on. It's much, much easier to offer if they don't have a nappy on.
Yeah.
But when you miss, then there's more washing. So I don't know if you used wool blankets, which are they're pretty good. Did you?
We just kind of had a bunch of woolen baby blankets that I used when she was little. Yeah.
Yeah. So I did use wool blankets a bit. I had a couple of really good, like, double-sided waterproof sheet things that are cotton on both sides, and they're just small, like about a third of the size of a beach towel or something. So really easy to wash and really small, and your baby just plonks on top of them. And the baby was always in our bed.
Yeah.
So they were right there next to me. But I found that I was going to offer anyway, so it didn't matter whether they had a nappy on or not, because I was always going to offer it. I wasn't going to go, oh, well, you've got a nappy on, so I'll just leave you. I was always going to offer. And that nappy gave us more protection and a smaller surface area for washing than anything else. And that they used flap wraps. So I invented flap wraps and I had them manufactured and I was selling them while I had little kids. But before I made them available to other people, I was already making them and using them for myself. So my children were always in those, and they were just so easy to access at night because you didn't have any Velcro or anything. They kind of just tucked up under this elastic belt and you could pull them open. They were waterproof and they were so convenient at night that it was as good as having a bare bum as far as access was concerned. So I would say that we did EC full time, but they wore flapper wraps loads. So I was paying attention to them and I tried to keep them dry. And I was up breastfeeding in the night, so it's really no big deal to hold them over a potty for 20 seconds when you're done. but they had a nappy on because of when you miss, the washing is a lot easier for me. Yeah. So if you're thinking of starting at night and you're not really sure how to go about it, or you're doing this in the day and do you want to have a go at night, then the answer is yes, you do want to have a go at night. Because yeah. Why wouldn't you? I mean, if you're thinking about it, you're obviously in a position where you're ready to dive in. And I would just say do it with whatever your setup is now, but think about what you're putting on over the top of that nappy. If you're in a kind of poppered sleep suit, mm-hmm. you're really making things hard for yourself. Yeah. You need to make it really easy, and you need to decide how you're going to go about offering. So if you've got a little baby and they're feeding several times a night, then offering after a feed or during a feed, midway in a feed, probably not just before a feed, because they're not going to like you for that, at least not to start with, not till they're expecting what's going to happen. Then I would just make sure that your clothing makes it really easy, so that you've got easy access to that nappy, and just deal with the nappy. Now you go, right, well, I'll take the nappy off for this feed and I'll expect to offer afterwards. Or I'll leave the nappy on for this feed and then I'll take the nappy off. I'll offer and I'll put the nappy back on again. And don't make it into a big, oh, what shall I do with my bed? How shall I waterproof things? Just give it a go with the nappy. See how you get on. And then you can even just open up the nappy and hold them just above the nappy. And then they can, you know, if your nappy's wet anyway, let them go on the nappy, fold it up, put a fresh nappy on, and off you go.
And so is it possible for parents to practice this when they're not sharing a bed with their babies or toddlers?
Yeah, I think so. So my first, I didn't bed share with her until later, again, because of all this, like, just expectation in my own head how it was going to go. And so yeah. That's how we did it. So I didn't bed share with her, but I did still feed her in the night. So if I'm still feeding her in the night, then I'm up with her. So it doesn't really make any difference that I'm not lying next to her, because I'm going to offer at times related to the feeds. So she's up, she's with me, I'm feeding her. I was breastfeeding. It doesn't matter how you're feeding. If you're feeding in the night, you're up and with that child. And to add a potty offer in there just really isn't a big deal if you've made it easy access to their bum. I think if you've got a child and they're sleeping through the night and they're little and they're happy and you've not, you know, they're not flooding your bed every night, you don't have some other reason that you really want to start offering, then I probably just leave that be and really concentrate on the morning and go, right, I want to catch that first wee of the morning. Yeah. Because they'll start to hold for that first wee. So if you can get them into the habit of, I wake up and I'm put on a potty, rather than I wake up and I lie there quietly and I fill my nappy and then I call for somebody to come, or you know, however it works in your house, if you can get into that, your first wee of the day goes in the potty, then that's a great catch to have as well. Because as your baby gets older, and they might put up a bit of resistance, usually that first wee of the day is pretty guaranteed. If you've got a child that is holding for the last part of the night, they will wee on the potty for you first thing in the morning. And you can keep that regular catch going, even if you're having disastrous days. So it's pretty handy. So set up that precedent, whether you're eating at night or not, try to get there for their first wee.
So you mentioned earlier on about split pants that they wear in China. What advice do you have for parents about how to dress babies for baby-led pottying?
Yeah, the easier the access to their bum, the more success you're going to have. That is my experience, and I think that's the experience of a lot of parents too. Like, if you make it hard for yourself, then you offer less because you think, oh, I've got to go through all that, and I'm not really sure if they're going to go or not. So you either misinterpret signs because there's too much effort involved in that being like an offer with nothing that happens. Or you just straight go, right, we're not doing it this time because it's too hard. There's too many layers. It's too much of a faff. They're going to scream when they have to lie down and have their nappy put on, all these other things. So you make it, you really need to make the clothing as easy as possible if you're going to offer on a whim. If you're offering at change times, doesn't really matter. You know, you're, you've got your baby stripped off then, and you're going to offer then anyway. But if you're going to offer based on some other rhythm, like feeding or just timing every hour, as you said, then you really need to make that access as easy as possible. If you're going to respond to their actual signals, like if they're in a sling and they squeeze their knees together, for me, that always meant I want to do a wee. If they woke up and they squeezed their knees together, and I just whip them out, hold them out, let them do their wee, and put them straight back in again, and that was every time. And you're not really going to respond to that in the same way. Like when they're in a big winter suit and they're all zipped up and poppered and there's layers and things, and you know you're going to get them out and they're going to be cold, you're just not nearly as willing to do it as if you can just whip their pants down for 2 minutes, unflap that drop flap nappy and put it back up again 30 seconds later. So there are easy specific clothes that you can get. Split crotch trousers are very popular, and drop flap nappies of some sort. There are still a few flap wraps knocking them out, actually, because we're in lockdown. I've found some, so I need to get them back up on my site. So there's still a few of them to buy, and I'm supposed to have been doing a pattern for ages and ages, which I haven't done. So I'll try and get that up by the time this goes out, so that people can and get themselves a pattern to follow. They're not so hard to make, but you can buy them too. And you can make them out of your own cloth nappies by putting a bit of elastic in various places and just tucking. And there's tutorials on the web for doing that too.
Great, thank you. So everyone I know in my personal life who practices nappy-free is a stay-at-home parent. I recently heard of a childminder who said that if you offer the potty often enough, then obviously you'll catch something and it just boils down to luck. Can this work with parents who have to work, and how can you get other caregivers on board?
I always think that's funny where they say, if you offer often enough, it just comes down to luck. You're like, well, you should talk to the people who are having a bad day. because for them, it doesn't come down to luck, because they miss every time. And for people who are potty training, for them, it doesn't come down to luck, because they miss every time. So I think you make your own luck as far as baby led pottying goes. A lot of the time, you know, there is some kind of communication going on there. But I would say this is much harder for caregivers, and you find this when people have more than one child, because obviously their attention is split. And you know, I had 4 in 6 years, so my attention was very split, but because of the way our routine worked, I was still always offering. And I could choose. Yeah, see, when it's your own kids, you know, you can choose who to focus on in a different way. When you're a childminder, you have to be very even-handed about who's getting the attention and what attention you've got to share in the first place. And so it is quite hard. I think that the same goes for caregivers as for parents, though, that if you can see it coming, why wouldn't you put it on a potty? If you know there's a rhythm there, why wouldn't you catch it on a potty? Why wouldn't you line your kids up on potties after they eat, and they can all sit there and sit on a potty like they do in China? If that's the way you are running things, then that's an option, isn't it? Because it's so unexpected and so unheard of, it's not so much of an option. But when you hit kind of the potty training room, it's much more like that when you're in the nurseries, then they almost are lined up in that way. Not in the room, obviously, but after lunch, the kids that are potty training are all taken off to go to the toilet. So you just kind of apply that principle to younger children, really.
Yeah.
I think that if people don't want to believe it, then of course they're not going to believe it. And if they've trained in a certain way and they know how they go about it and they think they're right, then of course they're not going to want to listen to you. But I've run potty training classes for nannies and childminders for potty training from 18 months plus. And one of the really interesting things about that was they were very international. So it was a school in London, and most of the people there were au pairs from Eastern Europe or from the Caribbean or all over the world. Wow. And when I talk about potty training, they all believe in their own cultural way of doing it. and they're all absolutely shocked about anyone who starts later than them or earlier than them. So it's pretty funny because you have them in there and they'll go, and I'll say, right, well, and they'll want to tell me about, because they're all actively looking after children and they've come onto this course because they're either potty training someone now, or the parents are asking them questions, or the parents have sent them onto this course, or they just want to get another certificate to show to the next set of parents they're going to. So I have people there who'd got 30 years experience in childminding and have raised their own kids and raised, you know, umpteen other people's kids as well. And then I'd have people there who are in their late teens who are on their second child ever, and it in a different country, you know. So there was a whole range of experience, but always they think that it's madness if you start later than they're used to, and they think it's madness if you start earlier. So they're most of them start much earlier, and the older they are, like the older the childminder was, the more they were used to things starting earlier than they do now. So they'd say, oh yeah, well, where we're from, no babies are wearing nappies after 12 months.
Yeah.
Nobody, like no one would be in nappies after 12 months. And that's just how it would be. You know, they'd be coming out from 6 months, and then by 12 months they would be done, and that was it. And these parents don't want me to start and their kid's 3 and a half and I'm still scraping poo off their bum. And then at the same time, there'd be people in that room going, oh, you're done by 12 months? We don't start putting them on the potty until 12 months. And then you've got people going, you put them on at 12 months? We don't even put them on until they're 2. And it would just go round and round the room, and you'd think, look how cultural this is, people. Yeah. Look at it. You all have such fixed ideas. And then for them to hear of how it's just done and what's so normal somewhere else, I think that was great. That was one of the best things about it, was to have all those people in that room and for them to hear how the way they did it really isn't the only way. There's not this madness way that the parents want them to do and this normal way that they're used to, but there's all these different normals and they all start at different times and they all have different levels of success. Yeah, so it can be done in childcare situations and you can start early. And it's done in different countries very, very successfully, and yeah, countries quite similar to our own.
Brilliant. I understand there's some controversy surrounding nappy-free, and one of these is with regards to waiting for readiness, which is kind of like what you've just said, offering them a potty when they're this young, they're being forced into something they're not ready for. And at the same time, there's also the belief that this is teaching children to hold on, and that can lead to issues such as constipation. Can you clear this up for us?
Yeah, so readiness is a strange one, isn't it? Because what I just said is, you know, basically babies are the same everywhere. Yeah. And all these different cultures have very different opinions on when a child is ready. And really, readiness used to be when it... So do you know... oh, God, I can't even remember his name now, because it's been so long since I did this. What's the guy's name who did all the readiness stuff?
I'm not sure,
he begins
sorry.
With B. Look him up for me. Anyway, mm-hmm. So he wrote this paper about readiness in potty training, but the idea was that parents were becoming very frustrated with their children and they felt that there was psychological damage going on there to the parent-child relationship, and the parents were becoming very angry when their children wouldn't potty train the way they wanted them to. And so he came up with this idea of readiness to give you an idea of what you needed to try to avoid that. And so when he published the paper, readiness was at about 18 months. And they've taken that and stretched it and stretched it and stretched it so that now readiness can be 3. Mm-hmm. And the difference between a child who's 18 months and a child who's 3 is, you know, really... they're not like the same child at all. They're really very, very different. And it became, when a child is ready to be helped to use the potty, to when a child is ready to perform everything around using a potty for themselves, they have to recognize that they need to go. They have to stop what they're doing in order to go. They have to be able to get their own clothes off. They have to be able to use the facilities, and they have to be able to get themselves back to wherever they were before again. And that's really not necessary for a child to be able to tell you that they need to go, or for you to be able to tell that a child needs to go to get this process started. And I think that's where the big differences are. Like, if I've got a child and they can sign to me that they need to do a wee, however that is, you know, if it's a deliberate sign, we used a chest slap, it's a deliberate sign like a chest slap, or if it's just the fact that I can tell they're dancing around and therefore they need to go and do a wee, or they come over, or they go and stand by their potty, or they come and they tug your trousers, or whatever it is that shows you or that becomes obvious to you that they need to do a wee, and you can help them to go, then help them to go. You know, they don't have to be able to stop playing themselves. They don't have to be able to make that decision. They don't have to be able to pull their own trousers down. They don't have to be able to do any of those things because you're right there. They're not on their own. You know, if you saw them struggling to eat, you wouldn't not help them, would you? Oh, let me cut that up for you. Oh, let me move that closer so you can reach. We help them all the time in all sorts of ways. And it's really similar to that. You can do potty training in that way with a young child. You don't have to wait until they're ready to really be responsible for everything. And this is where constipation comes in too, actually, because around the time that children potty train here, you do find that kids do end up struggling with constipation. But they can be much older, so they might be three and a half when they start potty training and end up with these problems. And the expectation is that they will take full control, that they will say, I am going to stop what I am doing now and go to the toilet, even though what I am doing now is absolutely fantastic and I really want to keep doing it. I know it is sensible for me to now go to the toilet. And really, they're never going to get that right. They're never going to get it right. And that you put them in a nursery setting and you expect them to do that, and it's just not going to work. It might work for some of the kids, but definitely for some of the kids, it won't work. And it's such a big expectation on them, and they end up holding. And then they end up in this cycle of holding, because they don't have to hold for very long to get just a little bit of damage that makes it easier to hold or makes it more necessary to hold. And then you end up in this cycle where it just gets worse and worse and worse. So, but that's to do with responsibility much more than it is to do with readiness.
Can you tell us what is a potty pause and how do we handle them?
So I used to basically say there's no such thing as a potty pause, and people get really, really cross with that, because obviously sometimes kids just absolutely refuse to go to the potty when you want them to. But I think that's just part of it, really. It's just part of it. So I just call that a blip. I'll be like, right, well, yeah, you know, it's going to go nicely. And sometimes it's not going to go as well as you're expecting. And that is a blip. And a blip might last a day, and a blip might last a week, and a blip might last until those teeth have come through, and a blip might last until they come down with chicken pox during that, you know, 4-day period or 2-week period when they're just coming down with it. And I really try to just behave in much the same way on those days as I would on any other day, and just keep. Advice. I'll do your advice for your potty pauses. But this is for when things aren't going as well as you think they should, which is really what a potty pause is. It's only last week, every time I offered, she went. And now, every time I offer, she won't even accept the fact that I'm offering. Either runs away, goes all stiff, starts shouting at me, you know, refuses to come when I say we're going to sit on the potty, all these things. Suddenly you've got a child who was really going along with it so happily only a few days ago, and now they're having none of it. And I would say, you're just going to have to bide your time on them. So make your easy catches, get that one that's first thing in the morning, get the one that's last thing at night, get the poo that comes after the meal. And if you have to kind of let things slide in the in-between times, then just let things slide. Really, if you've got any variety built into your routine, now is the time to pull it out. So if you've got a child who will sit on a potty and will sit on a toilet and will let you hold them out over the grass, then start using all of those things. Sometimes hold them over a toilet, sometimes sit them on the toilet, sometimes put them on the potty where it usually is, move the potty so they can see out the window and put it there, move the potty into the kitchen and turn it to see it somewhere else, have it so that they can see themselves in a mirror. If you've got a mirror you can put on the floor, absolutely love that. Sit them on a potty in front of the mirror, you know, do different things. And people will say, oh, you're just bending over backwards for this, this child isn't ready, they're really not going to want to do it. But what you're doing really is just keeping your hand in. Keep their hand in, keep your hand in, get it so that you're making a couple of catches a day, and they can be in nappies for the rest of the time if you want, if you don't want to offer, if you don't want to go through the arguments that might, you know, or the protests or anything that you feel is detrimental to how you're getting through your day, then just make your easy catches. And in a few days' time, you should come out the end of that. But if you go, oh, that's it, it's a potty pause, I can't handle it, or this has been going on too long, and you stop and you just put them back in nappies and you just put them back in nappies and that's the end of that, as if you'd never done anything, then it's much harder to come out the other side. But if you've managed to keep that definite, always do your first catch in the morning, always get your poo after dinner, or always sit after dinner, if you've managed to just keep three a day or two a day and one hopeful, then when the tooth does come through, or when their language leap is over, they'll be able to switch back to that potting and you'll be there ready, and it'll all just come together much better than it was before. But if you've removed it from your routine completely, then it's like a cold start. So firstly, you don't know when they're ready to start again, because you haven't got the signs of, oh, they didn't even protest once and now we're back onto it. And also it's a cold start for them because you're doing something different again.
Yeah, I like how you mentioned going and trying the different things, the toilet, the grass. I know my daughter, actually both of my kids have gone through a stage where they just refused the potty, but they were happy to go outside. So I would just take them outside behind a tree or something. And I know it makes it a lot easier when you've got multiple children. I'll take my daughter out and I'll just get my son to go to the toilet also. We'll go in the bushes somewhere. And if she sees him going, then she's happy to go as well.
That's right. You can definitely use that. But also when you've got other children and you've got that routine that you have to stick to, like we have to leave the house now because we have to go to school for these two kids, and you two kids, you've got to come with me. And really, I want you to do a wee before we go, and you can just take them out to water the flowers. Then that's brilliant, because they really need to wee on schedule at that point, or they're going to be in a soggy nappy.
Yeah.
And you can't make them wee, and you can never force them to wee, but you can take them out and hold her over a flower for 5 seconds, and it literally that's how long it takes to know whether they're going to go or not. It's not like you're standing out there for 15 minutes. Drop the pants, take them out there, hold them out. If they're going to go, they're going to go. And if you've got your routine set up, then they probably are going to go then, because it's a certain period after the last time we went, or it's a certain period after they just filled their little tiny tummy with loads of milk, you know, so they're... Yeah, so outside, really, really handy. Really handy.
That's great. What do you think could be done on a large scale to help encourage this natural infant hygiene?
I don't know, really. I really don't know, because it's so hard to... disposables are so convenient. I mean, they're just so convenient. Hmm. They're so convenient, and they're so much a part of people's lives, and... lots of people have lots of things going on where this isn't their top priority. And even if you were in exactly their situation, it might be a top priority for you, but it isn't a top priority for them. And so it's really hard to break into the mainstream because it is so very, very different. And I think this single-use plastics movement is really positive. And with people realizing that wet wipes are basically made of plastic, and that, oh, nappies really are a single-use plastic. But I think they're going to be one of the last things to go, because it is almost like medical supplies. You know, they get through tons and tons of single-use plastics in hospitals. Mm. And, of course, it's all in a good cause. It's not like the straw that's in your drink. So I don't know what... I think something quite serious would have to happen for it to really go crazy. People do become more conscious of it, But it does take a different mindset. And it's, so I would love to say, oh, well, we just need to do this and then everybody will be on board. But I've had too many conversations for that, really, where you go, no, this isn't, this really isn't for this person. They're just not interested.
Hmm. Okay, so now can you tell us about talking times tables? I remember being a bit of a math nerd in school, and this is something I would have really loved as a kid.
Oh, right. Well, yeah. So as you said, my kids are 12, 10, 8 and 6 now. So we've been out of this potting thing a long time. But I'm still a stay-at-home mum with them when I do my programming on the side. And so I've built this system to teach them their times tables, because when my eldest had to learn her times table, so she was about 7. So at the time they'd be 7, 5, 3 and 1. So if any of you've got children in any of that age bracket, you know, if you concentrate on one of them for any period of time, like 25 seconds, the others will go completely to pieces. So it was almost impossible to teach her anything, because there were so many other things. And what I tried to do was build it into the school run and be like, right, okay, we'll just try and do it on the school run. But there's so many pairs of feet, and there's so much dog poo on the street, and there's people near the edge of the road, and there's people telling me different things. And then I'm trying to hold hands, and I'm trying to watch, and I'm trying to correct the times tables, and this one's having a massive fit about it. And in the end, it's just too hard. And it's because you're trying to teach something and they don't want to learn it, and it's too hard for them as well. And I just didn't have the patience. So the next child down, I recorded myself patiently teaching the times tables, and I wrote a system so that I would phone myself. So this recording of me triggered this system that phoned up our house in the morning and asked for my daughter by name. And then she had to listen to me on a recording doing the same lesson that I would have done walking down the street, except that she learned the times tables that way, because I didn't get impatient, and she knew that in 2 minutes it would just turn itself off, and there was nobody doing it. It didn't matter, you know, if 6 people asked me to sort out their breakfast or mop things up or spill stuff down their fronts while that was going on, because the voice on the phone was concentrating on just her. And so it's brilliant. So they've all been through that now. And so my little one now, she's 6 coming on 7. So she still gets her phone call every morning, and we're in lockdown, so I'm supposed to be the teacher, and it's just an out and out disaster, isn't it? And so I almost never teach them anything, because they always end up crying because I have no patience. So the only thing that works still is this phone call. So this phone call still rings up. She's still really happy. She's got a worksheet that goes with it. So she's teaching herself the times tables. It's great. So that's what I'm doing now. And you can have me phone your child too if you go on my website.
Brilliant. So does it work with multiple children then?
Yep.
Yep.
They can get their own phone call. You set them up and they each get their own phone call, and they can learn different times tables depending how old they are. Oh, but you've got an international audience. So at the moment this only works with the UK, because I haven't sorted out the time zone thing yet.
Right.
So I need to figure out my time zones, otherwise it's going to phone you at 5 in the morning, even though you've put its phone at 8 o'clock at night, and it'll go, 8 o'clock at night UK time. Ideal time to phone.
I think that'll be great for the UK listeners. What happens if they miss the call or they're away on holiday?
If you miss the call, it just phones you back, because lots of people miss it because their kids don't get to the phone quick enough, or they're in the shower, or, you know, something like that. So it phones you back 3 minutes later and it gives you another chance. And then if you don't answer it then it just waits till the next day, and it gives you that same lesson you would have had, but it gives you on your next phone call time. So you set up your own phone call times. You can say, I want to be phoned on 9 o'clock on Thursday and 8:30 on all the other days of the week. You get 5 calls a week, and choose what times you want it to call you, and it calls you. You can change those times whenever you want. So because we're in lockdown, things are just slipping and slipping and slipping. So our phone call used to come at 8 o'clock, and then we gradually moved it to 9 o'clock, and now she's still coming to me going, we need to move my times table call. It's nearly 9 o'clock and we're not downstairs. I'm like, oh God, we better move the times table call. Just go on there 2 minutes before it phones us, putting the time up.
And so you can customize it if the child can't keep up or something like that.
Yeah. So if they're struggling a bit, then you just choose what lesson you want to have, really. So it's got a set of lessons and it walks you through them one at a time, and they guide you through learning the times table and then learning how to answer questions on the times table. But if you think they need a bit of practice, you know, maybe they haven't quite learned the times table yet, and so they're struggling to answer the questions, you can just, there's just a drop down list. You can go in and say, tomorrow, instead of doing lesson 15, let's do lesson 7. And it says, okay, we'll do lesson 7, where we just recite the times table a couple more times, and then it will start 7, 8, 9, 10 again and move you up. So I just had to do that for her, actually, because I wasn't paying enough attention. So I wasn't actually checking that she was answering these questions correctly. And so we had to go back and do some of them again.
Okay, so I will put links in the show notes to your Born Ready website, your Facebook page, the website for Talking Times Tables, and then all the resources we've talked about today. Is there anywhere else you'd recommend people going to learn more about what we've discussed today or to get in contact with you?
So you can find me on the Born Ready website, that Facebook group, ECUK, and Talking Times Tables, if you're interested in that. That's got its own Facebook page as well. There's lots of resources, new resources for baby-led potty training as well. I know that Rebecca Mottram's Little Bunny Bear, she's doing a lot of things with that at the moment, and she makes and sells EC clothing as well. So, and wool blankets and all sorts of stuff. So Little Bunny Bear, you go there, you'll find all sorts of things too.
Jen, I was so happy when you responded with enthusiasm at being interviewed for this podcast, and you haven't disappointed. Thank you for staying up to speak with me today.
Thank you for having me. It's been an absolute pleasure.
Okay, I have a final question for you to end on. I don't know if you saw this in the notes that I sent through to you, but if the entire world's knowledge was lost and you could only leave one sentence for future generations, what would it be?
This is like Tim Ferriss's What Would You Put on a Billboard? I want to say something to do with learning through play, because there's so much emphasis on kind of academics so young, and we try and hurry children through that. But I haven't got a pithy sentence for you. So let's say when they're playing, they're learning.
If you enjoyed this episode, you can join the discussions on our Facebook and Instagram pages. To hear more, subscribe for free on the podcast app on your smartphone. We are available on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Stitcher, Spotify, and all of your favorite podcast platforms. If you would like to offer feedback or suggest a guest, email us at untaming.podcast@gmail.com.